So, my name is Kate Wright, and I am interviewing...
Bill Davis.
Okay. So, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood, and what were you like as a child?
What was I like as a child?
Yeah.
That's not fair. Okay, grew up in Chicago up until the summer before I went to high school, and then we moved to Toledo. We lived in an interesting area. It was Park Ridge, which is a suburb of Chicago. And probably the most intriguing thing about Park Ridge is we had zero crime. We had a zero
really?
Crime rate. And the reason was because the head of the local syndicate lived there. And exactly. And it was one of the funniest things is there are four or five main streets that all come to together in the center of downtown Park Ridge. And then right there on one of the corners was National Bank of Park Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy came into town one time, and he walks in, and the vault is open. Everything is really loose. There's no security guard. We had one policeman.
Mm-hmm.
And we only had that because it was mandatory that every area, it was small, like we had 2,500 people. And this guy comes into town and he's sort of a small-time crook, and he decided to, this is too good to pass up, so he comes back and robs the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing was that the guy that we heard about was the police chief. I guess he was the chief. He was the only one. So, but the head of the syndicate finds out the same thing.
Mm.
Finds out that the place was robbed. He is incensed. He goes down to the police chief, and he said, basically, we want to apologize for this happening in my town. It wasn't our town. It was his town. And relax. We'll find the guy. Well, the guy that robbed the bank was so stupid that he got a 1,000 years old. So this is like motels, not hotels. This guy's in a motel, sitting on the bed, just all this money, and he hears this knock on the door. And open it up, and it was two guys from the syndicate, who proceeded to beat the tar out of the guy.
Oh man!
They made him count the money, call the bank, find out how much he stole. And he had spent maybe $100 or something.
Mm-hmm.
The syndicate made up the difference.
Wow.
They turned the money to the bank, and then after this guy had gone to the hospital, they delivered him to the police chief, who threw him into jail. But it was so, it was, and this isn't, I think, has more to do, I mean, I was born in 44.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a lot more to do with the time, times than anything else. But we thought nothing of riding our bikes into, what we referred to as uptown and going to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
We just set our bikes around. Nobody owned a chain. Nobody owned a bike lock.
Yeah.
In the summer, I'd leave home about 7 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, I was more of a jock. I have a brother who was a musician who played drums really well. And my sister, my mom... rode when she's my mother grew up in a very, very privileged family. My grandfather was the president of Heinz Lumber.
Wow.
First time my mother ever pumped gas for herself was when she got married.
Yeah.
She's what the heck is going on? My grandfather owned he actually had a gas tank on his property where they could just fill up. And the first time my mother ever paid for gas was when she got married. So my dad was an incredible disappointment, I think. I lived in a time when we would in summer we were playing baseball, in the fall we were playing football, winter we were playing basketball or skating and things like that, and then spring start baseball again. But we in the summer we had four or five of us, and we'd all take off at 7 in the morning, we'd play, and wherever we were around lunchtime, that family and all the moms were stay-at-home moms back then.
Yeah.
And they fed us. And then 6 o'clock, I'd go home just to show them I hadn't been kidnapped or killed.
Yeah.
And my parents were never worried about me being kidnapped because it would have been the ransom of Red Chief.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that story?
No, I don't think I am.
I think it's O'Henry wrote it. This kid is kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so atrocious that the kidnappers contact the parents and say, okay, we want $1,000, before we go, $10,000 to deliver your kid back. And they just wait. And they just wait when they finally get the kidnappers to pay them to take him back. So just to get her, it's a great, yeah, Ransom of Reggie. Great, yeah, great.
All right.
But I just, that was it. I did not realize, my dad was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
But he hit it so well. You know, I didn't realize it. And he was kind of a womanizer, and which ultimately resulted in their divorce. But as a kid, man, I had it wired. It was fun.
Yeah.
So very, very, you know, nothing spectacular, nothing, just kind of sports and school. And at a time where we really, not, I feel so sorry for kids today. I really do.
Interesting. Era to live in.
The biggest challenge we had was, you know, chewing gum in class. You hear that as a joke, but it was actually true.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. What does it mean to you to be an American?
It is without a doubt the greatest country in the history of the world. It is. Some of the stuff I will talk about, depending upon what we get into, is going to probably have a faith back.
Yeah.
Which you can, if you, what school do you go to?
Mead High School.
Okay. Depending upon I don't want you to bear the brunt of some teachers saying, oh no, we're not going to put that.
Oh no, it's fine.
Okay. It is a country that was built on faith.
Mm-hmm.
It is a country that I think has lost its faith. I think the if I could have, you know, there's a question you ask sometimes, if you could go back in history and have a meal with anybody,
mm-hmm.
who would it be? Christ would be number one for me, because I'd like to know what my life should have been like and what have I screwed up. But the other two would be John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
Really?
Would love to sit down and have their opinion of what we've done to the country.
That's interesting.
We are not perfect in any way,
mm-hmm.
but if you take a look at the support that any country has given the world, there hasn't been a country in the history of the world that has ever given as much support as this country has,
mm-hmm.
monetarily, in terms of men in battle.
Mm-hmm.
And we are really doing everything we possibly can to destroy the country. But as far as the country itself, it is the greatest country in the history of the world.
Okay.
Nowhere, any country, have you ever had the opportunity to be what you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not perfect. Certainly, women have had to fight for even kind of a slice, mm-hmm. of the pie. People of color, same thing.
Yeah.
Even understanding that. I love people who say, "Well, geez, we ought to try socialism."
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been to socialist countries, and the concept is that, oh well, under socialism everybody's the same. No, they're not.
Yeah.
There is a bigger caste system in a socialist country. I was in Hungary in the late '90s when they were just coming out of the Iron Curtain, and
yeah.
I think I got a better understanding of the United States being there. Because they were just
really?
Coming out, and people's in their individuals in their 20s, 30s, up to 80s, 90s,
mm-hmm.
none of them would look you in the eye.
Really?
Nobody, because under a socialist regime, you don't look anyone in the eye, because it could be the secret police,
mm-hmm.
it could be, and it's just absolute, and you would ride their trains back there, and
yeah.
they would just be sitting there like this, looking straight down. The future of those countries with the kids.
Yeah.
You'd be sitting in the train, and you look over there, and the kids would look at you and smile, and you wink, and they just crack up. And then the parents would just, you know, the parents were just so downtrodden.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, it's a great country.
Okay.
No one else would have put up with me, so.
Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
My grandfather on my mom's side,
mm-hmm.
The guy that was the president of Eisenhower. If you had met him, you would never know that he had money. you would have never known, other than some of the things that he provided for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know him back then, obviously, because I was in my mom was in high school. And,
yeah.
But yeah, George Mooring, he taught me the value of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a couple of summers, I had started a little company. I cut grass around the, when I was like, 9, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he found out about it. So he had, they lived in Wheaton, Illinois. We lived in Park Ridge, and okay, so all up suburbs of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we go there, and I cut the grass. And he paid me $5 with the idea that two of it would go into a savings account, three I could keep.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the summer, first year, he said, well, let me take a look at your savings account. And I looked, he said, okay, and he matched it.
Wow.
And he taught me, like, first time I cut the grass, I cut the grass mm-hmm. the way I cut our grass. I put the lawnmower in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, where's the lawnmower? And he flipped the lawnmower over and he said, you always clean your tools. And I'm like, whoa. So first thing I did when I got home, I cleaned ours, which took like about 4 days.
Wow.
I had so much crap that it just built up over years of misuse.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned the value of hard work from him. I learned the value of savings from him. I learned the value of treating everything, people, the tools that you use, whether they're your intellect or whether they're a physical tool, that you treated it well. So that was, that was the one, the thing I learned from him. I think another guy that had a huge influence on my life, my dad from a negative perspective, from a positive perspective, he was into sports. I was
mm-hmm.
into sports.
Yeah.
So we bonded.
Yeah.
But he didn't bond with my brother, and he didn't know how to handle my brother because my brother was, he loved Elvis Presley, like Terry mm-hmm. Rowe got this idea, and was a musician, and it just, my dad could not understand that at all.
Yeah.
And so I learned the positive things about bonding, and I learned I learned a lot of negative things, and I learned about the fact that he'd been a womanizer and the drinking and stuff. And I think he was an influence on the negative side, but it was a positive. But it was a positive outcome because I was able to see that. Third one was a gentleman that his name was George Smith, African American guy. George never got past. I don't think George ever got past eighth grade.
Really?
Because he went to work, and big African American guy that ran the mail room for Dun & Bradstreet in Toledo through an incredible series of I'm sure God ordained situations. I started out at the University of Dayton on an athletic scholarship. The school got put on athletic probation for some stuff they did. Everybody lost their scholarship except the basketball team because they just won the NIT.
Yeah.
I was on a football-baseball scholarship. Mm-hmm. Baseball doesn't make money, and our football team sucked. So,
yeah.
And they really didn't give a darn about a second-string freshman, quarterback, kicker, punter, et cetera. And so Dayton was a really expensive school. It's a land-grant university. It's a private school, Catholic. And they basically said, look, if you can figure out a way to pay for sophomore year, we'll renew your scholarship for junior and senior year.
Okay.
And there wasn't any way. My parents couldn't afford it. And I could not make enough money in the summer to pay for it. Excuse me. So I still had an offer from the University of Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to take that. And then I went in, and then I started really thinking about my future.
Yeah.
And the chances I was never going to play in the NFL. I did actually end up playing in the Reds farm system for a couple of years, but I wasn't going to make the majors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided what I did was I gave up my scholarship because I figured I could work and make more money that way.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So I ended up, through a weird series of events, ended up working in the mailroom of Dun & Bradstreet.
Mm-hmm.
And George and I became really good friends. And he was like a black grandfather. He reminded me so much of my dad. And George was he And they say never, I'm sure it was the eighth grade, never got past the eighth grade,
mm-hmm.
but he was a hard worker.
Yeah.
And he made everybody who worked with him better.
Really?
And that was a lesson I tried to, that, you know how some people, the story about some people lighten up a room by leaving it,
mm-hmm.
and other people lighten it up by coming. I try to lighten it up by showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do something positive and support people, that's something I learned from George. And he did. And his whole thing was he spent his entire life running that mail room.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew he wasn't going to go further.
Yeah.
But he made the number of people who ran through that mail room and ultimately probably achieved more in their lives than they would have had not having not had the opportunity of working with George.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was a gift, you know. So I would say yes, George would be. In fact, if you want to, George, you know, my grandfather and George Smith.
Okay. What were your feelings when you learned the outcome of the 2016 presidential election, and have you ever felt that way following an election before?
Okay, I'm going to be really, they're going to really hate me. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I could not stand Hillary Clinton. I think the Clinton family is one of the most evil families in politics ever.
Okay.
All of their money, all of the their fundraising has been done in Canada because the rules up there are different.
Okay.
She pulled stuff when she was Secretary of State,
mm-hmm.
getting donations into their fund from foreign countries, which is illegal.
Yeah.
She got people killed. The perfect thing for me was when she was named Woman of the Century by Planned Parenthood. That defines Hillary Clinton for me. I couldn't believe, I honestly believe that was a God thing.
Okay.
I don't think this country would have lasted 4 years with Hillary Clinton. I really don't. Now, you may be a Hillary fan, and if you are, I apologize. And
no worries.
But I was thrilled. I could not believe it. Is he perfect? God, no. I wish he'd mm-hmm. get the hell, excuse me, the heck off of Twitter.
Yeah.
But the problem is, some of that stuff is the only place you can find it is on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not getting it in the newspapers. We're not getting it from the news people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very happy. The other thing, and part of the thing was, I really do believe one of his things that he said, making America great again, which I believe in, and because I think America has gone downhill. But the other thing was cleaning the swamp, draining the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, D.C. is an absolute swamp. I am ashamed of the people that we have. It's a disaster, the people that that we consider to be the leaders of this country. The stuff that they purport, the stuff that they support, the stuff that the things that we vote on that are just, we would have even 20, 30 years ago. And I hate to sound like an old fart, but I am. So I was very happy. I could not believe it, because I really did not believe that this country would have survived 4 years ago.
Okay.
So yeah, that's when it ought to raise a few eyebrows.
What was it like when the first time you voted?
I was trying to think of who I voted for first. Let's see, 44, would have been 64, 65. 65 would have been, Kennedy was shot in 63.
So that was LBJ's election, 64 to 65.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have. I don't think. I would have been 20 in 64, so I wouldn't have voted in that election.
Yeah.
It was 21. It would have been the next one, so I probably voted for Nick. At the time, I wasn't too thrilled with either one of them. Let me think. Stevenson ran against Eisenhower. I'm trying to think who was right. Anyway, I wasn't particularly impressed with either one of them. So it was a. Um, voting for the least dangerous, I guess.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a, to me, this election had far more, from my perspective, had far more, because I thought the country was at stake than the first time I voted. The other thing, too, is I hadn't really done a lot of world traveling at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I really recognized the incredible gift it is to be able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
As I've gotten older, it has meant more. You know, and particularly when you start seeing in areas, you know, South Africa and some places where they've never had the power to vote, and all of a sudden they have. And there are people who are walking 5 and 10 miles to vote. And here, you know, oh, geez, it looks like it's going to rain. I don't think I'm going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with Brexit?
Yes.
Okay. I was in the securities business and investments and a speaker for most of my career. And I became really good friends with a couple of people within security investment firms in Spokane. And this Friday night or Saturday night before the vote over in Great Britain, Chris, a girl that I know, and she and I and just a bunch of people had dinner that night.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom asked me what I thought, you know, what was going to happen with Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, depends on the weather. And he said, why? He said, everybody, and that this was the time when everybody had gone from, oh, we think it's going to pass, to everybody knew in their minds it was not going to pass. They weren't going to leave the union. And I said, it's going to depend on the weather. And he said, what would that have to do with it? And I said, because when you get right down to it, I said, the younger people will vote to stay in the union.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, and this is not a slam on younger people, but because it's closer to socialism. And you just take a look at Greece, it's down to the World Bank in terms of just depleting in the funds, because they won't change the concept that they can retire at 55 at the same, no matter what you put into it, you get. And I said, it's going to depend on the weather. I said, if the weather is bad, it will fail. Or Brexit will be voted for. They will leave the union. And he said, why? I said, because people who remember Britain, older people, remember what it was like, the Blitzkrieg was like, when London was getting the crap bombed out of it, when there wasn't a city there after Hitler had annihilated it. Those people are going to remember what it was like to be a Briton, what it's like to be British, and they'll vote to leave. Good weather, bad weather. Really bad weather, it won't be important enough to the people who would vote to stay, and they'll assume everybody else will carry it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. The weather was bad, and it was the generation that had, a couple of generations that had lived through the building of Great Britain, and that, I think, is what caused it. So, I guess the question was, sorry to ramble.
No, you're good.
The first time I voted was not that big a deal, mainly, again, because I wasn't super impressed with either candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of the coin was I was too stupid to realize what I had. As I've gotten older, I've gotten a much greater appreciation for it, particularly when you see what happens in terms of other countries.
Yeah. Okay. What advice would you give to your teenage self?
Oh, God, you dummy. One of the greatest fears, I don't think you and your family were part of the church when we first moved in, when we were going through the construction phase. I did one of the messages one Sunday, and one of the things I said was, my greatest fear, and I in understanding heaven the way I understand heaven, since it's perfect, this probably doesn't happen, but my greatest fear would be to have to look at my life the way God planned it,
mm-hmm.
and the way I've lived it.
Yeah.
Because there's an awful lot of ready, fire, aim in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Learn when to shut up, which I've never learned. Watch who you take advice from. You really are known. I really believe you're known by the people you hang around with and the people who are your enemies.
Yeah.
There are people who would be enemies of mine that I take pride in the fact that we are on totally opposite sides.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times when I haven't listened to people I should have listened to. There are decisions that I've made that were just absolutely, you know, I look back at them now and think, what was I thinking? Be very aware of ready, fire, aim.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe think through things a little more, think through things a little more clearly. There will be far more things in most lives that you wish you hadn't done,
mm-hmm.
than wish you had. Because there are very few things in life that you can't, on second thought, do them.
Yeah.
You know, you might have to start a little bit later in life, but there are very few things that, boy, if you don't do it now, you know, you're never going to get a chance to do it.
Yeah.
So I would probably tell myself to a little more thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize you don't know it all. Be careful of the people you hang around with, and for the people who are really sharp, take counsel from them.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to admit you don't know everything.
Okay.
Because I sure didn't, and don't.
Can you tell me about one or two people that you remember who have been particularly kind to you in your life? If they were here, what would you say to them?
Oh, man. Particularly kind to me. Well, again, my grandfather. And if he was here, I would tell him... The previous thing that you had asked me about, what would I tell my younger self?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is be more aware of people that are doing kind things for you, and be gracious and show gratitude when you have the chance. That would be another thing that I would tell myself. Because unfortunately, a lot of times you don't realize what they've done for you,
yeah.
until it's too late, you know. Mm-hmm. So that would be, my grandfather would be one of those people. My mom put up with an awful lot that I didn't realize she was putting up with. I think sometimes if I'd been more aware, I would have. But I was 5 years older than my brother and about 9 years older than my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother and sister were always closer.
Yeah.
I was sort of there, they came along.
Yeah.
And I've always been kind of a loner.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I wasn't, I was always out doing stuff, whether it was sports or whatever it happened to be. And I don't think I kept as close to the family as I should have. And so the other person, yeah, would, you know, my mom did a lot of really terrific things
mm-hmm.
for all of us.
Yeah.
And keeping the family together when things were really tough. And I don't think I showed enough gratitude. I would just tell her, the older I got, the smarter I got.
Mm-hmm.
And how much I appreciate what she did. And I would tell my grandfather probably, you know, the same thing. I also had a teacher. I had a, before my final in marketing,
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those nights where just everything I touched turned to manure, and ended up, it was the middle of winter, and somebody threw a brick through the back window of my car, and so I got very little sleep that night, and took my final,
mm-hmm.
and it was just one of those things where, I mean, I just, nothing worked.
Yeah.
So this is back, you know, now you to get your classes, we do everything online, and it's, you know, tech and everything else.
Yeah.
Back then, believe it or not, you walked into a field house,
mm-hmm.
every class that the university was offering,
mm-hmm.
there was a table, the prof was sitting there, and he had a bunch of cards. And when he ran out of cards, that his class was filled.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dreading getting my grades. I had an A going into it, and I didn't even remember the test.
Yeah.
And I remember the grades came, and it was one of these things where you give me, you just put the piece of paper on it, you go, okay, great, that was an A, yeah, okay, that was an A, oh, okay, that's okay,
uh-huh.
B. And I get down to, I got marketing class, and I got a B.
Uh-huh.
And I said, there's no way I deserve a B. So I got him, I caught him at, when we, the day we were signing up for the classes, and I went over and I said, he said, oh, Bill, how you doing? I said, fine. I said, I think I owe you a real vote of debt of gratitude. And he said, you have no idea. I said, was it that bad? He said, yeah. He said, you got your name right. He said, you realize, he said, what was the class? It was Marketing 301. Yeah, he said, you missed that. He said, what was wrong? He said, did you go partying the night before? I said, no, trust me. I said, I didn't go. I said, the one thing I can definitely tell you, I showed up sober.
Yeah.
I said, it just was one of those nights, everything just turned to crap, you know, and I was feeling lousy, and anyway. So I said, I really appreciate that. Thank you. He said, yeah. He said, I really would have loved to help you keep your A, but he said, I'd have been fired.
Yeah.
The fact that you gave me a B, I know you stuck your nose on. So, so I think that would be the one.
Okay. What does religion and spirituality mean to you, and what role does it play in your life today?
It plays a bigger role in my life today than it did in the past, and mm-hmm. I think my life would have been a lot easier, probably been a lot more successful if it hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
I have had so many situations where God has intervened in my life. When I went to the University of Dayton, I was a journalism major. I had scored, I think I had aced the English part of the SAT. In fact, when I went to school, they waived my freshman and sophomore requirements, and I started as a junior. I dropped out of journalism because I couldn't take a speech class.
Yeah.
I mean, literally could not take a speech class. I was scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
We met on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 8 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up every morning at 4 o'clock with a pain in my stomach. What day is today? It was Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Went back to sleep. It was Tuesday or Thursday. I got up, went in the men's room, threw up. I have played minor league ball. I have played college football. I've never gotten sick before a game.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared to death. And so I dropped out of journalism, and I actually, my finance major came when I asked a counselor, I said, you know, what can I major in where I wouldn't have to take a speech class? And he said, well, accounting or finance. So I didn't have a personality to be an accountant, so I majored in finance. So that was kind of God leading me.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up, the best job I ever had for 17 years was I was a national keynote speaker for Dreyfus Corporation.
Really?
And that came through a series of weird things, but one of them was, Rick Hampton was a assistant pastor at the Covenant Church that I belong to in Bellevue,
mm-hmm.
and Highland Covenant. And Rick came up to me one day and he said, you know, what we ought to do? And I said, no, what is that? And he said, we ought to team teach an adult Sunday school class. And I said, Rick, not a chance. You do not know. And then he said, well, don't worry. He said, if anybody has any biblical questions, you know, I'll be able to handle those. I said, well, I'm not worried about them. I said, Rick, I can't stand up in front of a group of people. I mean, I had to do it
yeah.
sometimes. But it was always, if I knew I had to do it, I would meet beforehand.
Yeah.
And it was just, and I was literally scared to death. So between, but Rick kept pushing.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, quite honestly, just to shut him up, I said, okay, let's do it. And I figured I'm going to be so bad, he's going to come to me after the second week and say, Bill, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
And I didn't. It was actually pretty good. And then the guy that I think did the best I have ever seen, Keith Lundberg, told me one time, we were having, you know, coffee or something, and he said, he told me how scared he got before every class.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd been doing it for years. And I said, you're kidding. So I started that. One thing led to another, and then I'd been running Bank of America's investment program, mm-hmm, in Seattle. They kind of changed the way they were going, and about the same time, Dreyfus Corporation, that we had worked with some of their wholesalers, asked me if I'd be interested in a position with them as I headed up their key accounts department,
mm-hmm,
but I got to stay in Seattle.
Yeah.
And through a strange series of, again, God-ordained events, the year that I started doing that, Dreyfus was basically a bond firm,
mm-hmm,
and it was the worst bond market in history. And so I had to figure out ways to get new clients and keep the clients that we had, in spite of the fact that we specialize in something that's going through its worst experience in history. And so what I started doing was training for new managers,
mm-hmm,
within bank programs in particular. And somewhere along the line, this stuff got back to New York, what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And in 90, I started with them in 93, and I think it was like around 97. I was back in New York around Christmas time, and the chairman came up to me, who I knew, and he said, and we were in, it was the old Pan Am building, but now it's the MetLife building.
Mm-hmm.
It's Park Avenue, and it's a building that actually goes across Park Avenue. And down on the corner, there's a shoeshine place.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he needed to take you out of the office and talk to you about something,
mm-hmm,
and it was never gray. It was white or black. It was really good, mm-hmm, or it was really bad. He would suggest you go down and have a, let's go down and get a shoe shine. Everybody knew that. Well, I was in Seattle. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So was in there. He said, Bill, how you doing? And we're talking. And he said, you know, how are things going? And he said, let's go get a shoe shine. And I looked down at my shoes. My shoes look great. I said, no, that's okay. And you could have heard a pin drop.
Oh.
You don't tell the chairman. No. What the hell are you thinking? And I think we should get a shoe shine. Okay, I'm not the sharpest pencil in the pack, but when he says it twice, okay, there's something magical about getting your shoe shine. So I think,
yeah,
I better. They went down there and they said they were creating this national keynote speaker,
mm-hmm,
position. And he said, you know, would you be interested? He said, we've heard a lot of stuff about what you've been doing. It's working. And would you be interested? And this was Monday. Because I remember I flew in on Sunday. I was going to be there Thursday. And I said, they said, there aren't enough. And the other thing they had done was they changed the job title of what I was doing, or the job description,
mm-hmm,
and was making it all administrative. And I had to move to New York. And I had already told them, I said, I'm not moving to New York. Because my son was in high school, and,
mm-hmm,
I'm not going to do it to him. And I said, besides, I'm from Chicago, so New York is my enemy.
Yeah.
So, long story short, I said, well, I'll tell you what, how about if I do this? I said, let me write the job description. I said, I'm here for 4 days. I'll give it to you Wednesday. You take a look at it. If it's not what you have in mind, then I said, because there aren't enough keynote addresses a year,
yeah,
to keep me busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only got two. I know one thing about myself. I don't have a neutral gear.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fast gear, and I have falling asleep in the middle of the meeting gear. And
yeah.
I don't have that middle gear. And I said, I'll put it together, and you look at it. And I said, if it is not what you want to do, then we're gonna part friends. This is a great. I've had more fun here, like from '93 to '97. I said, I love this. Love the business, but I'm not moving back to New York. And I said, okay, so I did it. And what I did was I just built the thing out. I said basically, make me responsible for getting our wholesalers into offices they can't get into.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be pure value added. I don't sell products because I have seen too many value added people suddenly start selling the products and I'm just another salesperson.
Yeah.
And I said, that's not what I'm supposed to do. I will get them in. I'm responsible for that. I'm also responsible to never, in the entire time I'm here, not be invited back. If I am ever not be invited back, you fire me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means I'm not doing the job. And so I gave it to him, and he looked at me, he said, yeah, but if you're responsible for all of this stuff, he's even going to have time. I said, sure. I mean, I'd much rather be over busy. And I ended up with a job where I traveled about 250,000, 300,000 miles a year. I averaged 4 or 5 flights a week. Greatest job. But it was speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same guy that couldn't take a speech class in college.
Yeah.
So, at every one of those, and I had dozens of stories of stuff where God has intervened, where I was going to be doing something and it didn't work and I couldn't figure out why it didn't work. And then kind of like that thing you look back, you know, 2020 hindsight, oh yeah, I had a job offer that was incredible with this firm. And when I was running B of A's program, and I was really ready to take it. And boy, just something, you know, just God sitting on my shoulder and then beating me over the head.
Yeah.
And I didn't take it, and the firm went toes up in 6 months. And no one would have seen that. So it means a lot. It means, you know, number one, I know what's going to happen when I die. When you're in my age, it's as good. Yeah. And I probably got 20 years left, 30, if I'm lucky. Be nice. But it means a lot. I think one of the challenges that we have today is that too many kids aren't being educated, they're being indoctrinated.
Yeah.
You know, there is no God, this is all a mistake, this is all just by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of kids, and a lot of adults,
mm-hmm.
don't have anything, they don't, there's no safe harbor, there's no anchor
yeah.
for them. So that when you get your teeth kicked in, and we all do,
mm-hmm.
There's nothing to hold on to. There's nothing, you know, there really is absolute truth. There really is absolute right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have an anchor, then you just bob along with whatever direction the current happens to be taking you.
Mm-hmm.
So it is absolutely essential. If I had one piece of advice to give people, I'd say if you have faith, hold on, particularly like your age or kids going into college, you know,
yeah.
high school, college, if you have faith, hold on to it, because you are going to have 4 years at college where profs are going to do everything they can, and they're going to use your grade as a weapon,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're going to use that on you, and they're going to do everything they can to strip you of your faith. If a person doesn't have faith, then I would just suggest, look, there's two sides. You know, prove there's a God or prove there isn't. I think trying to prove there isn't is a lot more dangerous. Because if there's no God and I live as if there is,
mm-hmm.
I'm no worse off.
Yeah.
If there is a God and I live like there isn't,
mm-hmm.
then not only is life hell, but hell will be hell.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, I'd tell anybody, just, you know, if you don't believe, then just say, okay, hey, God, I don't believe you're there. You know, screw you. I don't think you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Prove to me. And I guarantee you will.
Okay.
So, to me, it is the single most important thing you can have.
All right. So, thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. I hope I didn't ramble too much. And
no,
I hope you got some
not.
Information that you can use. So, hey, say hello to your mom. Do you have a ride?
I can call my mom.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because I got a car. I'd be happy to drop you off.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Hmm.